Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Public Advocate. My name is Sally L. Cordy, and I am your host. Today, our guest is Joe Burns, and I have had the privilege of interviewing Joe Burns twice previously. He is a child and family rights advocate and activist, and he has been working for many years on helping children remain with their families. And I can't tell you what a huge issue this is, and he will tell you certainly more. I would like to tell you the name of the book that he has written, however, and I'm in the wrong stream. Oh, dear. But it's called Secret Courts. Where is it? Secret Courts. Where did it go? Okay, it's called Secret Courts. He'll give you the full title, and I will pick up Joe Burns now. Sorry about that, Joe.
Not a problem, Sally. Good evening. I should say good morning because I'm calling from Spain. It just turned midnight here, so.
Well, thank you very much for calling into the program. And if we had been able to hear you better last time, we would not need to re-record it, so. Since it's very late, I know that you can't scream into the phone, but do your level best regardless to speak up, because that far of distance is never not a problem. So, okay, all the very best to you, Joe, and tell us the proper title of your book and why you wrote the book and why it's taken so long, quite frankly, for it to be published. I believe this is the first time it's published, although you've written it twice.
Yeah, I originally wrote it 3 times ago, 3 years ago, and I sent it away to a publicist, and the publishing agent said that it was very good, it had all the information, the facts and all that in there, but that she felt that what I was doing was that I was preaching to the converted, and that's not really what my intent was. I wanted to write a book that the average person who knows nothing about the topic could basically see what's going on in these secret courts. And I think maybe first the title of the book is Secret Courts, and the subtitle is Ireland's Next Scandal Waiting to Happen. But it's actually not just Ireland, it's Ireland, the UK, US, and Canada. And I'll tell you a little bit about myself first, that I have no children of my own, but I have raised children over the years, other people's children, and I'm still in contact with many of them today, and I've never been personally harmed by the system at all, so I've no agenda, I've no axe to grind with anyone, but 7 years ago, I was invited to attend a meeting with a friend, a work colleague that I'd known for years. And all he told me was with social services, but he didn't give me many details. And I thought, as most people would think, that the family have done something wrong. That, but I'm going to go into the meeting anyway. I'm going to support them in what way I can to help resolve this situation. I woke up that morning thinking that I lived in a reasonably free and democratic society, but I was absolutely shocked at what went on and what I learned in that meeting. I learned, for example, that agents of the state can walk into your home and tell you how to run your life, and that they can threaten you, make all kinds of demands, they can bankrupt you, totally ruin your life and the life of your children. And this is all done in secret, and this is why the book is entitled Secret Courts. And at first I thought, I'm missing something here, that this case is an anomaly. And then when I started researching, I found that this was going on all over the place. But the problem is that the people involved are gagged, and many people in the UK, the figure is about 400 people a year, end up in prison. simply for, say, for writing a message on Facebook that their children are taken by social services. And this happens in the U.S. and Canada. It happens definitely in the U.K., Australia, New Zealand, and Norway. And basically in every other country in the world, you don't have all of the horror stories because they have a completely different system. The system that they have in Ireland, the UK, and the US is that the system revolves around social workers. So what happens, this is the part that most people can't get their head around. Everybody understands the criminal justice system, that everybody watches Law and Order. So the police investigate, the prosecutors decide if it's in the case, and really punishment. They're parallel jobs, and then the other system, social workers, the prosecutors that they use are power to decide not to prosecute a person. They are there to win. They're there to stretch out cases as long as they can and make as much money from it, because obviously the longer the case goes on, the more money they make. And then the punishment end of things is that the social workers again are involved in punishment, because the child goes into foster care or residential care, or the child is adopted. So this is, it's sort of like a double jeopardy system where you're, for the same crime, that you're prosecuted twice. And when you start, when I got into this originally in the original case, I started researching, and I started 7 years ago, and I started talking to other people. And the more I talked to people, the more I found that people needed help. And, I got into saying, well, you should talk to this person or that person, or have you tried this, that, or the other? And then eventually I got into it full-time. I quit my job. I took early retirement, basically. And so for the last 6 years, I've been living on my savings and investments and that. And the organization that I am involved in with is called Alliance of Parents Against the State. And we had a website, aps.ie. And we are still looking after cases. We haven't taken any new cases since May of this year, for two reasons. Is because the two principal people involved, me and another gentleman who is our legal expert, he is in very poor health at the moment, and he's been receiving chemotherapy, but he still manages to do some cases and to help lawyers. And personally, I can't afford to do this anymore, so I have to go back to work for the next couple of years. So what I was trying to do before I basically got out of it was, one thing I tried to do was I tried to start an international charity in four countries, which was quite an undertaking, but I didn't quite succeed. And the other thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to write the book to put down everything that I'd learned in 7 years of research, because what I've learned about the system, I have a very unique perspective on this, is that when I go into court, we pick cases, me and my colleagues, and there are several other groups that we work with, in our in the UK. I have cases in Canada and the US, many cases in the US. We deal with anything from rickets cases, shaken baby syndrome, just general SBS cases, and we're sort of like the Innocence Project. We pick and choose our cases very carefully, and we pick cases where the parents are not accused of any crime, and cases where we believe that the parents are 100% innocent. That if a social worker shows up at your door tomorrow and takes your children away, you go out, you get a public defender, or in Ireland, in the UK, it's called a legal aid. And so you meet this legal aid or public defender 30 minutes before your trial. They haven't had the time to do the research. They know nothing about you. They haven't visited your home. Whereas we have the time to pick the cases. We have the resources. We don't charge any money for what we do. We use our own money basically for everything. We have no funding. We were actually offered funding by the Irish government last year. And I said no thanks, because I don't want the government coming in telling me how to operate. And so basically we do an awful lot of research. And over the last couple of years, judges just love seeing us in court, because when we walk into court, we've done all the research. The judges know that we've picked a case that we can win. We've studied all the case law and precedents and the human rights laws and everything else. We go in there, we hand the judge the verdict and say that we have to win this way, because here's the case law. So we basically win every case. Maybe not, we don't win every round. If we lose in the district court, we go to the high court, and we've gone all the way to the Supreme Court a number of times. I also have, at the moment, I have three cases before the European Court of Human Rights. Like I say, we do this primarily for the children involved. As to my goal is to keep children at home with their parents. And the everything that we know, if you read this book, everything that you know about child protection, about adoption, about the industry, about the children's charities, everything that you know is absolutely wrong. And I cover all of these topics in the book. I publish case histories and everything, stories, and let people make their own decisions. For example, there's one case in there that I talk about is Fran Lyon, L-Y-R-N. Fran was, she was a young university student, had a crisis, unexpected but not wanted, pregnancy. And one day she got a letter through her letterbox from a social worker whom she'd never met, saying that when your child is born, we're going to take your child and place that child for adoption. And her parents offered to raise the child, but no, they didn't want to. So what she did was she went to the media, and she went to a journalist, Sue Reed, who covers a lot of these stories. And she went to a member of the British Parliament by the name of John Hemming. And, you know, if you want to do some research on this topic, it's if you search John Hemming MP, Fran Lyon, and the topic of forced adoption. I cover all these things in the book anyway. So, you know, if the state can act in cases like that, somebody can decide, make an arbitrary decision that the worst punishment after the death penalty, that they can take your child away and adopt that child, put that child up for adoption. That is absolute tyranny. And if they can do that without, you know, investigations and due process of law and everything, But this is exactly what happens in the UK. The UK is currently the only country in the whole of Europe that allows for forced adoption. And at the present time, there's 2,400 forced adoptions a year in the UK. And I've seen this myself. But what happens is a social worker is there in the delivery room, takes the baby from the breast of the mother, doesn't want that baby to bond with the mother. The baby's rushed off to a foster home and put up for adoption, and then that parent has to go into what they call goodbye meeting. They use very, very sanitized terms in this whole industry, so you have a goodbye meeting. So you're told before you go into this meeting that, look, you go into that meeting, go into that room, see your child, smile, be happy, don't break down, don't cry, don't say anything out of line, and we'll take a photograph and just pretend that everything is normal, but this is the last time that you're ever going to see your child again. I mean, this is right out of stories that you would hear from Auschwitz. But this is what's happening every day in Ireland, the UK, the USA, and Canada. It's heartbreaking. Some of the stories that I've dealt with parents on the very day that they're going to go into the goodbye meeting when they've lost their children. There was a case of a baby that's in Spain, where the Spanish police, armed Spanish police, stormed an apartment where this baby, who had been born in Spain because the mother fled from the UK, the baby had Spanish social services had assessed the situation. They didn't have any problem with this mother raising the baby, and then at the age of 5 months, the Spanish police storm her house, take the baby away, and they told her, don't worry, you'll go to court tomorrow. What happened was the baby was, within an hour, was on a flight back to the UK. This is a baby that doesn't even have a passport and somehow was able to leave the country and get to the UK. The social workers lied to the Spanish court. They had orders, which legally they could not have had orders. The mother wasn't even invited to the court, to the Spanish court. They basically come snatch your child, take the child to another country. This is all done illegally. This is kidnapping. And then when the child is back in the UK, the judge, the defense says that, oh, you didn't have orders, you couldn't legally have orders. And the judge turns around and says, well, we'll correct that mistake right now. We'll just make the orders retroactive. You wouldn't believe it. These cases are not published anywhere. They're all in secret. The parents are gagged. There was a man jailed in Ireland a few months ago. And what happened was his children were taken by social services. And the grandmother came over and said, where's my grandkids? He said that social workers had taken the children away. The grandmother, obviously irate, got on the phone. And within an hour, the police came, arrested him, and he was jailed in secret court. He was jailed for 2 weeks just for telling his mother that his children had been taken by social services. It's just hard to believe, Sally. There's so many stories like this, like actual case histories. People have to realize too that for me to tell you any of these stories, that I am actually breaking the law. Because the law is defined as saying anything to anyone that happened within these courts. There's no written judgments from the courts. there's orders written, but there's no written judgment to say the reason why the children were taken. If you look at the case of adoption, if I asked you now, Sally, what do you think about adoption? What's your opinion on adoption? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know if you can, Sally?
Yes, Joe?
Yeah, sorry. What is your opinion on adoption? Do you think it is a good thing or a bad thing?
Right. Everybody would normally think that this is a wonderful and good thing to do and helpful to society, and the light that you are shedding upon this is, of course, a horrifying tale of child abduction, you know?
Yeah. You see, the public perception is sort of the Hollywood image of adoption, that you have these doe-eyed orphans languishing away in orphanages, and that nobody wants these children. So you have these heroic people that go through a long and expensive process, and they open up their heart and their home to these children. But where do these children actually come from? And the fact is that adoption is that the children obviously come from parents. And as one Irish judge quite succinctly put it, he said that adoption is the breaking up of one family to create another. And what happens in...
These children are taken into foster care or adopted, are they closely monitored by the state to make sure the children are well, or does that not even play into the equation?
No. You know, this is the funny thing about it. I call the book Secret Courts, and the secrecy runs through the whole system, and what happens is in Ireland, the Minister for Justice or the Minister for Children does not have the power to even go into these secret courts and know what happens. Legally, they can't set foot in those courts. And the in-camera rule, and this is true in Ireland, the UK, Canada, and the US, that the courts are so secret that nobody's allowed to know what's going on. So what happens is... The people that are managing the system, the children's charities, the people who are supposedly experts, they have no knowledge of what happens in the courts. These prosecutors that I spoke about, we have guardians ad litem in the U.S., you have CASA, and what happens is that they haven't been in the courts, so they don't know what's going on. They've never met the children. And there's quite a few children that I advocate for that are in the care system at the moment. And in most cases, what I've done, the children have guardians, but the guardians are basically just another social worker working against the child in the system and the family. So what I've done for many of these children is to get them their own lawyers so that lawyer can go in and speak directly to the child, and basically the first thing they do is fire the CASA guardian or the guardian ad litem in Ireland or the UK, and then the children never appear in court. So you have judges, lawyers... experts and everything. They've never met these children that they're supposedly protecting. And this is the difference between what myself and my colleagues do, is that we, you know, carefully pick and choose our cases. We meet the children. I insist on going into the kitchen and looking and seeing that there's adequate food, nutrition. I go into their bedrooms and I look to make sure they have adequate bedding, clothes, toys, stimulation, you know. I mean, you look at a house and you can judge from that. And in a lot of cases to children as well, which is very, very difficult to do sometimes. And sometimes I've had to resort to methods like getting a phone to them and have them call me or put credit on their phone so they can send me a text or a phone call. The secrecy of the whole system is that there's no management from above, because the people at the top have no idea what's happening in the courts. They have no legal entitlement to know what's going on.
Well, the people at the top are the ones who create these secret courts. So the people really at the top are the ones who create the secret courts. So it's inexcusable that people who are in this program don't know what's transpiring. I don't accept that as any level of excuse, believe me.
I was 2 years ago, we had a referendum in Ireland, and I was debating against politicians and professors of law, and I said to these politicians, I said that basically what you're doing is you're legislating in the dark, because you have never been in a family court. And this is what I do. I go into these courts, but I also go into the children's homes.
Well, I have to say right now, what you're saying is something that I am calling for. I am saying that it must be a prerequisite for people who run for office have to spend, of course, my issue is vaccines, but they have to spend an hour locked in the room with a child who is autistic and see if they have any way of communicating effectively with this child. Well, likewise, anybody who runs for public office must attend these secret courts. They must put their eyes on it. We have to change the rules.
Well, what I say in the book is that we don't need secret courts. There's no legal justification for having two systems of justice. And the family court justice system is especially unjust, because you don't have all of the checks and balances that you have in the criminal justice system. You have four separate bodies. In the family court system, you have two bodies. You have the judge and social services. They do everything from investigation to punishment. But the thing, this is what the first chapter in the book is, I can't get my head around this. Is that people need to understand is that if you're accused of child abuse, that there are two parallel investigations and there are two diverging systems of justice. So everybody understands the criminal justice system, but the family law, so people don't even realize that there's two prosecutions. But what happened, what's different in the family law system is that you're guilty until proven innocent. And you have no opportunity. You couldn't afford to prove yourself innocent. And the system doesn't have all the checks and balances. And what I'm saying in the book is that you cannot have secret courts. There should only be one system of justice for everyone else. And the reason I say this is not just an opinion, but this is based on the fact is that in the entire world, you have three different systems of protection for children. The one system that most people don't even know about is that in most countries in the world, there are no social services. There's no social workers. In India, in China, there's no social workers whatsoever. Police deal with all of these cases. And the only time that the state would actually get involved is when a child is actually harmed, or there's, allegations of abuse, the police would come along and investigate. Every police force in every country in the world has the right to walk in and take a child without a court order. They can walk in and remove the child to a place of safety. That exists in every country in the world. But the three systems is one where there are no social workers at all. The other system is for in the system in Ireland, the UK, US and Canada, Norway, Australia and New Zealand, is that social workers are at the whole hub of child protection. So you have a situation where police walk into a house to investigate a crime, and you're investigating the crime after the crime has occurred. It can prosecute you. When you look at, you send a social worker into the house, and what is supposed to be the case is the social worker has two choices. They have a choice on one hand to advocate, and if it's just a question of the family just needing a little bit of help, that they give them that help and then walk away and everybody's happy. Or if it's a more serious case, then they prosecute. You can't be a prosecutor and an advocate at the same time. The two roles are completely incompatible. But what has happened is that we have a situation now where in the UK, from statistics in the UK, 70% of all children are removed on the basis of future emotional abuse. So essentially that's like a policeman going to the judge and saying, Judge, I want an arrest and detention order for this person because I believe that at some point in the future that maybe this guy is going to rob a bank, or maybe he's going to murder somebody, or he's going to commit some crime. And this is essentially what social workers are doing, is that they're going in there with crystal balls, and they're going to decide that this child is going to have a bad outcome. So what they're going to do is going to take the child supposedly from the frying pan, but then they're going to throw the child right into the fire, because everything that we believe about the foster care system and the adoption system is completely wrong. Foster care, there was a study done on foster care by MIT by Professor Joseph Doyle, and he did a study of 12,000 subjects over 15 years, and the only thing that he was looking at was the outcomes for these children. He's a business professor, so he wanted to know the value, measure the value of foster care. And the fact is that most of these kids in foster care get dumped on the streets at the age of 18. Can you imagine, would you dump your child on the streets at 18? I don't know any parent that would do that. But this is exactly what the governments are doing. They're taking these children, babysitting them, putting them at a far higher risk in foster care. They're guaranteeing the child a bad outcome in life in 80% of the cases. So you're taking a child from a supposedly bad home, and you're damaging that child so that they're practically guaranteed for failure in 80% of the cases. So you're taking children, for minor reasons, for some situations that are entirely fixable, but there's no incentive to leave that child in the house, because the way it works in the U.S. especially is that the social services only get paid when they take a child. They don't get paid for fixing families. So there's no incentive there to go in and fix a family. They only get paid when the child is actually in care. And then what you believe about adoption, what most people believe about adoption, is that it is a good thing. But the fact is that many of these children are taken for cases like Fran Lyon. If you look that one up on the internet and do the research, 19-year-old university student, and their child is going to be taken for forced adoption by a social worker that she's never even met because she believes that the child will have a bad outcome in life. And Fran actually fled to Ireland. And she now has two children. She lives quite happily in Ireland. But she never did get to finish university.
What are the numbers we're talking about here, Joe? It's very important to know. Let's take Ireland. Well, let's start with the UK. What is the percentage of children, is there any way of determining the percentage of children who are abducted by CPS, Children's Protective Services, or the equivalent in the UK?
Well, in the care system, there are currently 100,000 children in the care system in the UK, and the child population of the UK, I believe, is 23 million. I'm not sure. I haven't got a calculator in front of me. The numbers, it's 90,000. But the statistics, it's very hard to get these kind of statistics from the government. They just won't give you that kind of information. But in the UK, the statistics are that there are 90,000 children in the care system. Every year there are, 100,000. That's the highest figure in 25 years. And the child protection system in the four countries that I mentioned, all of those systems have doubled in size and budget in the last decade. This is the only growth industry left in Ireland and the UK. Business is closing all over the place in austerity. But the only industry that's prospering is the child abuse industry.
You were saying earlier that children who are white, there's less money to the social worker if the child is white that they remove from the home, and I was suggesting that they get a bigger, better money on the black market for those kids because the white children are bringing in a tremendous amount more than the darker children. However, here in the United States, we don't break it up that way. We break it up between children and disabled children. It's $4,000 to this CPS worker if they can remove a child from the home permanently, and $6,000 if they can remove a disabled child. All children who are Native American are registered as disabled when removed. So that, of course, is an added incentive to remove Aboriginal children. And, of course, they are disabled because another caveat it being for them to remain on a reservation would be that they must take any vaccine that's offered. At least in Canada, that was the rules. So they well could be disabled. This is a very big problem here. Everybody who has disabled children fears CPS. They really do. This is very serious.
Canada has
and, of course, those are vaccine-injured children. I mean, so this is why I know as much as I do about this, is because working with parents of vaccine-injured children, their greatest fear is CPS.
Canada has a very strange system compared to the other three countries. That what they do is they tell parents that, look, if you have a disabled child, that child is not going to get the care that they need in your care. So what you're best to do is to make the child a ward of the state, and then the child will get the care. Of course, they don't. What happens when a child goes into care? There was statistics in Ireland released, a study done by a university in Dublin, the UCD, and the fact is that a child in the care system is 10 times more likely to commit suicide than children in the general population. That's how bad the system is. That should have set up
a long time. Well, I've interviewed a woman by the name of Velvet Martin, whose child was given that line, your child can't get the care he needs, unless he lives with a foster family, which is completely ludicrous.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you know this lady, but her child was returned to her bruised beyond word with broken bones and lived for 3 weeks. I think they returned the child to her because they didn't want the child dying in their care.
Yeah, I've seen the photographs. I know that as well. And I know of another case in Canada as well, where what happened was social services showed up at this house to remove 3 children. And at the same time, there was another woman who just happened to be visiting with her newborn. And they decided, well, we'll take this child as well, even though they didn't have orders for that child, which is basically kidnapping.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
6 days. 6 days later,
well,
that baby died.
You know, we have a bill underneath the screen. I need everybody to call the Senate Finance Committee because it's right now, it passed the House and it's in the Senate Finance Committee. And you can also call your own senator to oppose monetary incentives for removing children from their homes. It's called adoption incentives, and the number of the bill is on the link directly under the screen. We have to act decisively right now. It has to be reauthorized. Right now, there is no funding to steal children. So no doubt, now, children are not being stolen. So we have to make sure this does not get reauthorized. Everybody who's listening to this show must call the Senate Finance Committee and their own senators.
This is another thing that I talk about in the book, is that democracy only works if you participate in democracy. You can't have a government of the people, by the people, for the people, unless the people actually are involved in the process. So you really, really need to pay attention to what your government is doing in your name. But if I can just talk about it, adoption in the States is a very, very strange system in the States. That what happens is that there's two different systems of adoption. One is where you go to China or Russia and you adopt a child. But basically what's happened is because the breakdown rate, they call it the disruption rate of adoption, is 1 in 4 children will be handed back to the care system or dumped back in an orphanage in Russia or China. And Russia basically just got tired of children showing up at Moscow airport with notes pinned to their coats saying that they'd been rejected. They also got tired of Russian children being murdered after they were adopted or sexually abused. But that's the one system of adoption that everybody knows about. But there's another very, very strange system, that what happens is if you adopt a child from the care system, there's 4 different rates that they pay. And it ties into what you were saying, is that what happens is if you want to adopt a child from care, a white child, they pay you to adopt the child, and the child has your name and has the same rights as your children. But what happens is they pay different rates for white children, black, Hispanic, and Native American, and disabled children. And they obviously would pay a heck of a lot more money up to the age of 18. So we're seeing a situation, people on Craigslist right now, and you search for children, you can trade children on Craigslist. And that's what's happening to these children, is that when the money runs out at 18, they're dumped on the streets by the parents, which is basically what's been happening in the foster care system. And the foster care system, I don't know the rates in the U.S. or Canada, but in Ireland, foster carers get about $500 a week.
I would like to tell everybody at this point, because we're about to go off the air, Joe Burns, that Joe's book is called Secret Court, Ireland's Next Scandal Waiting to Be Exposed. Please purchase several copies of this book, because this is not the kind of thing that we can afford to allow to happen as caring human beings. It's an outrage. The way vaccines are an outrage. We are hurting our children in every conceivable way. We are allowing it if we don't stop it. So don't turn a blind eye. This is a really important issue. Thank you, Joe Burns. Please say anything you'd like in closing.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sally. I really appreciate even if you don't buy the book, study up on the topic. Love it, John Hamming.